Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Pentagram, dedicated to Henry Foreman. In the year of the primal force, the dawn of terrestrial birth, man mastered the mammoth and horse, and man was the lord of the earth. He made him an oil skin from the heart of an holy tree. He compassed the earth therein, and man was the lord of the sea. He controlled the vigorous steam, he harnessed the lightning for hire. He drove the celestial team, and man was the lord of the fire. Deep mouths from their throne,
well, 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 episode 78, my friends. This is Agitators Anonymous. I am Alan Averill. Episode 78. Yes, indeed. And last week's episode with Jonas from Catatonia seems to have been, so far, one of the biggest, most popular episodes. Already over a few thousand views on YouTube, which for a small YouTube channel like my own is pretty good. If you want to go over and take a look at that video, just put in Alan Averill, A-V-E-R-I-L-L, into YouTube. Also, there's the Metal Salvage Chats over there, which I'm doing with Joe from Gamma Bomb, which is just basically us getting a bit steamed, a bit boozed, a bit pissed, and talking about heavy metal. Speaking of the heaviest of metals, some of you will have noticed, really, I suppose, that in the last, let's say, 4, 6, 7, 8 episodes, I've been kind of moving away from some of the social, political commentary, or talking about the pandemic, talking about lockdown, talking about all those things, as it kind of felt we were all pretty weary of it. And I decided to pivot a bit back to music, to metal, to all those kind of things, and maybe just give everyone a bit of a rest from dissecting what was happening around us during the pandemic and all that kind of thing. But this episode, I'm going to take a little bit of a step back into that, or at least try to have a little bit of a ramble across a few observations. Now that, let's say, the dust has not settled, or the fog is dissipating, dissolving. Does fog dissipate or dissolve? I'm not sure. I'll have to look that one up. But now that things are, well, let's just say, a little bit clearer. We are not out of the woods yet, as they say. So I thought, can I look back now on some of the things that I said, some of the proclamations, some of the opinions, look back with a little less anger and frustration and irritation and all of those kind of things, and all of the other drivers, the moods that were driving some of the old podcasts, and examine what did I realistically get wrong, what did I get right, all of those kind of things, and take a little bit of a look back and assess kind of where we are, maybe with a slightly calmer head, maybe not. Anyway, if you want to follow me on the Instagram, nymphiang_primordial. Also, finally, Primordial officially now has an Instagram page. It's just primordial_official. For years, I suppose, it was just something we neglected. I had my own one, and the realization that I would just have to run another one, just sort of broke my brain a little bit as we all try and grasp with the fact that we are more interconnected when our brain or some part of our brain is telling us you need to escape, you need to be posting less, have less screen time. But I just finally gave in. Some of the others have access to it as well whenever they can be bothered. But it would be great if you're into Primordial to go over and follow us there on Primordial Official. There'll be gig announcements, there'll be some competitions, some merch, this kind of thing. I, of course, do realise we are playing catch-up with everyone else, but that's just the way things go. If you want to listen to other podcasts, and there's a kind of thriving community over on the Patreon, you can go there and join for as little as a dollar a month, because I don't really understand how to work the tiers. Etc. Yeah, there's discussions, book discussions, film discussions. It's actually pretty lively. It's pretty interesting. And it's kind of like a little small community. Sounds strange because I had a lot of misgivings before I started a Patreon. But then, as they say, needs must when the devil farts in your face. And so when everything collapsed, it just became a sort of an evil necessity, or at least I felt it was one. But actually, most of my misgivings have proved to be ill-founded, and it is actually pretty cool. So there's other podcasts up there. Sometimes I post songs, rehearsals, alternate versions of songs, of Dread Sovereign, of Primordial, of, you know, all sorts of things. So go over there and take a look. Patreon.com, Alan Averill. So what prompted this little moment of reflection, I suppose? Well, a few things. Firstly, I came across an interview I did a year ago with Legacy Magazine, mainly about pandemic and lockdown. And I just sort of examined the amount of anger and vitriol in my answers. And I sort of tried to then assess a year later where exactly we are. And what did I get right? What was just the sense of, I suppose, righteousness that was clouded by anger? Because let's be honest that one of the things that maybe is missing from some of our understanding of what happened in the last 20, 21 months is allowing people, as they say, the rope, maybe, to hang themselves by their own petard of aggression and frustration, because it really did drive us to the edge of sanity. So some of my proclamations and my opinions were driven. That was the driving agency behind some of them. And also, you just don't quite know what's happening. So how much was clouded by anger, and how much was quite on the money, and how much, as most things I view in this world, inhabit the grey area? Well, let's get into it and have a look. First things first, I must say that I've been getting lots of messages from lots of people about, yeah, I saw a gig in Budapest, a gig in Bucharest. There's 2G in Germany, 3G in Germany. Apparently the difference to that is gigs can happen at 2G, which means you don't need your mask inside. You can move around. 3G, you do. People are telling me restrictions for this have been lifted, restrictions for that still in place. The band Dune just did an entire European tour, and so Duncan from Dune is going to do a little kind of like a tour report segment for me for next week, and he's recording it hopefully as we speak. Come on, Duncan, get me that file. And that's really interesting, because they did a 3-week tour. Okay, it really seems to me that restrictions and rules are going to be very much down to even who's on the door, who the security is, who's behind the bar, what bar it is, what area it's in, what street it's in, what city it's in, what country it's in. All of these things now are going to have to be taken into how you assess if you're going to go to that gig, or as a band you're going to be able to get there, all that kind of thing. But gigs are happening. Now, they're happening for bands who generally are pulling between 25, 50 and 150 people. How that's going to work once we get into 200, 300, 400, 500 people, a little bit more money to be made, a little bit more security, a little bit more people looking at what's going on. But it seems to me that as a booking agent myself, I don't know if I really talk about that much, but for Dragon Productions, it's going to create an extra, how shall we say, you're going to have an eighth sense of which promoter is working with which club and how much they enforce these arbitrary bureaucratic rules, which I make no secret. Obviously, if you've been listening to the podcast, you'll know my feelings about this arbitrary bureaucracy. And I say this when it comes to the backdrop of Ireland still having no gigs Nothing has happened. Music is still outlawed fundamentally inside. Of course, I hear stories about people having raves and this and that and the other, and somebody with an acoustic guitar meeting with a little tiny generator on a beachfront and all this kind of nonsense. But still, no gigs here. And yesterday, as I speak, on the 14th, the 13th, our Tánaiste, our minister, prime minister, Leo, young Leo, said that we may keep restrictions past October the 22nd. They'd been aiming for October the 22nd as this, let's call it, the release date, to let society go back to something they claim to be normal. I always had my doubts, and sure enough, 10 days beforehand, they're rattling their sabres or flying the kite or whatever you want to say it, or testing public opinion for not allowing restrictions back. So it wouldn't surprise me to see the entertainment, arts, music, creative industry again thrown to the wolves and not allowed to reopen on October 22nd. I think it quite suits them to have no nighttime economy. And I think that an awful lot of people in society have kind of got used to where it is now, which is that we have created a papers please society. You need your VC passport to get indoors mostly, unless of course you then return to what I said 3 minutes ago and you find somebody who just gives you the old wink, nod, whatever that may mean. You figure that out. And so we've created this already, and it feels to me that the state might just sacrifice once again whatever economy there is for young people or arts or entertainment or whatever they want, you know. And this seems to be the first thing that always gets curtailed. And of course, they will say it's because X amount of people haven't been vaccinated and that it still poses a risk. But of course, we all know it, that it is not just that, it is many other decisions as well. And of course, the intoxicating nature, the aphrodisiac of power itself, necessitates, through our understanding of history and human nature, which is inarguable, that releasing the reins of power once you have a tight hold on them isn't easy and doesn't really happen. And anyone assuming that that's the natural state of things just hasn't really been thinking about any of these things, really. But what is alarming is the element of society who just have kind of gone, well, look, it's okay like this, you know, have a few pints, show your papers, have a few pints, get pissed a bit earlier, home by 12, pizza on the couch, Netflix, yep, okay, cool. Ah, look, there's people on the street, what do you want? It's over. Anyway, so what am I talking about? Let's have a little discussion about, a little ramble through. I've got a few pages of notes. They're not in any particular order, but I'm going to try and maybe assess what I got wrong, what I got right, if I can manage to do that. Those of you who know me might find it a little bit amusing and unusual that I may concede some ground to what I got wrong, but let's have a look, you know. What are my talking points in episode 78? Well, first of all, in episode 1, 2, I'm talking about biometric electronic passports with which you gain access to society. And no one can tell me that I haven't really been bang on the money when it comes to that. Now, of course, this podcast is not some form of aggrandization of my understanding of the nature of power, but certainly an awful lot of people who I suppose are not maybe students of history or authoritarianism or fascinated by all of the elements within I think underestimated how disaster, let's call it disaster capitalism or disaster authoritarianism, or the overreach of all of the triumvirate of tech, state and health were going to impose themselves into your, or insert themselves into every modality of your life. And I think that while the vaccine passports are not exactly that, they certainly are, you have an electronic passport which gains you access to, at least in Dublin, in Ireland, going inside. If you want to socialise, if you want to have, go to a pub or a restaurant or something like this, or a museum. And so this is an incredibly dangerous, it's a dangerous power to grant state and institutions, because if, say, for example, the virus is reduced to naught, and disappears from society, as Sam Harris would say, drive it to extinction? If it is, does that mean that these powers are going to, let's say, you know, scupper this app, sink it below the waterline, and say, okay, you don't need those anymore because we've defeated this problem? Does anybody really in their right minds think that the nature of power gives up power once it's attained it? I would say, if you think that, then you are rather naive and you don't really understand history, and have rather a massive misreading of the situation, because that ain't going to happen. All you have to do is really take one look at what's happening in Australia with track and trace apps, the state calling people, asking them for facial recognition of where they're supposed to be, all these kind of things, and you can see it taken to its furthest extreme. And the worrying thing about what they represent is that the technology, it's not even the technology exists, the state of affairs already exists within China. That we have, they have a social currency system whereby, you know that this already exists. So it's not like as if that that state of being is something that we can see in the distant or not too distant future as to be materialized. It already is here. And so we have to ask, are our states moving towards that kind of future? Because if we're talking about people's economy being almost fully online, their work being fully online, the idea, if you take the old medieval square in any small town, this is where trade happened, this is where the religious men and women stood on their soapboxes, and which I guess is where the phrase comes from, and preached to those gathered. It was where the church tower viewed the square. It was the place where the town came to do its business. If that represents, now in modern terms, the internet, and your electronic passport is your entrance to that area of trade, the fact that it could just be switched off arbitrarily for a transgression by state and tech, which might include, for example, this podcast. Perhaps saying this in an authoritarian state would get me into trouble. And anybody who thinks that that is not a potentiality is not really understanding the nature of democracy or authoritarianism. I did a podcast called, Democracy is Not the Default Setting of Society, and it isn't. Now, I've had many people go, ah, Alan, you're just, you're doom-mongering, and it won't happen here. And to that, I have to say, really? Because history is on my side, which states that the struggle between the 99% and the 1% has been ongoing for hundreds of years. And I've said that this moment could represent a revolution by the 1% against the 99%. And anyone who thinks that a massive transfer of wealth and power hasn't occurred to grant that 1%, whether it's state, state technocracy or big tech oligarchy, whatever you want to call it, if those two words go together, again, I think is a naive misreading of history. And I understand that people are fatigued and weary with this, and they just want to get back to living and get back to normal stuff. And they have a modicum of it now, so maybe that placates them to a certain degree. But what vaccine passports potentially represent is the ability for institutions of state, tech, governance and authority to literally unperson you, unfriend you from your ability to earn a living, from your ability to to freely state your political aims. Don't forget, freedom of speech is a cornerstone of Western civilization. It's a cornerstone, should be one of the cornerstones of all civilization. It should be something that we fight for. It should be something that is recognized as an inalienable human right. But it seems that that is something that has kind of gone by the wayside, and in a very dangerous way, because we can see huge big tech censorship over the debate. I mean, we have now created a papers please society whereby you have to show a paper to get into a place. And for people in Western Europe, doesn't this remind you of the worst stories, bureaucratic stories from the former East? And if you somehow look up to those institutions of the former East, then you must ask yourselves, why did the common people in those areas rebel? Why was there a fall of the Berlin Wall if you're busy flying a hammer and sickle in your avatar? Maybe you need to take a little trip to Eastern Europe and ask people there, how was it living under Ceausescu or Tito or whoever else? Brezhnev, I don't know. And listen carefully to their answer. However, this, of course, is just mostly performative. However, if we are going to make, or I am going to make, spurious East-West commentary, what you have to realise is that for the implementation of such a sort of papers, please, society, you need a vast civil state apparatus who is connected to the forms of authoritarianism, whether it is the Stasi or the fact that what they say, 1 in 4, 1 in 5 people in East Germany were connected to the state. And you need people to be, you know, snitching on each other. You need people to be watching each other. You need to create a sort of internal surveillance society, a paranoid society who is watching everyone else, which you can see there is an attempt by the media to do that in the divide and conquer strategy of framing those who are unvaccinated as, you know, almost like social pariahs or lepers or murderers in some quarters. And you can see this is a kind of ongoing media theme. But what you need is a massive state apparatus. And I've said this before, having done some travelling, is that if the New World Order's, the New World Order, Goosestep, is, you know, if Ryanair employees are marching at the forefront of that, well then, again, what we're dealing with is mainly a kind of ham-fisted bureaucratic chaos and not the furthest reaches of either diametric polarised argument. And that's what I've been trying to preach throughout, trying to say throughout the almost 80 episodes of this, is that the truth is grey. I'm, in a sense, politically homeless. I don't belong to either polarised side, left or right, in my opinion. I am very much entrenched in the idea that scepticism is the only rational perspective on every single thing. And so, therefore, you question everything. And that's just what I've been trying to do. So to question the validity of, you know, electronic passports and what it represents for liberty and freedom is, of course, going to be my stance. Some people just see it as like, ah, look, it's just handy. And, you know, you also may be right. It may not be, you know, the forerunner to some form of new social Stasi enterprise at the behest of big tech, as I said, you know, monopolies. But it certainly does represent, I think, a very serious infringement on civil liberties, which somehow have become an alt-right or right issue. How that happened, I don't know. Liberty, libertarianism. Libertarianism means a different thing in the USA to Europe, by the way, I may add, if you are listening in America. If we look at traditional libertarianism, egalite, fraternite, liberté, it's enshrined within the three defining words of the French Republic. But what I mean is that the application is very much left to individuals. And in a society like, say, Ireland, which is not traditionally authoritarian, unless you count the Catholic Church, but is not, you know, traditionally, if you're leaving the decision up to the guy at the door, a bouncer at the door of whether people are in and out, unless they're going to get fined or there's some sort of pressure or other, it's the kind of thing that's just going to slip and slide. And you do wonder if the application of this is just going to fall by the cultural, social wayside as people just go, ugh, that thing again. Because it's going to be hard to scare people into that without the massive social state apparatus. But, you know, maybe that's done and I underestimate it. Certainly, I will say that travelling lately, few people, if any, ask for anything from anyone anymore. Hence my Ryanair eulogy. Anyway, yes. Well, what else are we going to talk about? What else do I ramble across? Are we still in a form of lockdown? I would say yes. A long time ago, the you know, the levels of 1 to 5, sort of people stopped talking about it. I think that was deliberate in order for people to just get used to this new modern way of living and accept that they would be living in a form of 1 or 2. Personally, I think stating that we aren't in a form of lockdown, you may disagree, that's okay, of lockdown, lets the authorities away with riding roughshod over and what those things meant. And still in Ireland, as I said, you know, by midnight, the city is empty. There's a form of curfew. There's still no music allowed inside. And so for me, those are still forms of the elements, the expressions of lockdown. And I think that every country is dealing with varying degrees of it. As we enter winter, are they going to move backwards, forwards? Most politicians are making noises, of course, like, well, you know, don't be so sure, careful, sort of careful now type. Oh, that's a terrible. Sorry, Father Ted. Sorry, Dermot Morgan, for invoking your name in such an unfunny way. But certainly lockdown is still happening in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, a lot of the Anglosphere countries. We can see that. And it seems that the 0% people, at least here, maybe slightly look and recoil in a sense of vague horror at the of what's unfolding in Australia, going, yeah, you guys are giving us a bad name, maybe by some of the things that you're doing. Because don't forget that Australia has, I think, 1.5 deaths per day, I think, average over the last couple of months. So it's purely about, well, look, to me from the outside, it looks like it's about authoritarianism and a whole lot of other social factors moving on the inside of that country that maybe are a little bit difficult for us to understand from here. But anyway, it looks grim. However, quietly, Sweden has had almost no deaths in the last 3 months. So did they get it right? I think you could say they did. I would say they did. They managed not to take people's freedoms and liberties. They took a little hit at the start, but if you look at the league table, I think they're in the, you know, bottom half when it comes to deaths. So were they vindicated? I would say yes. You know, and I also thought that the way some countries and some sections of the media almost wanted them to fail to be a very strange signifier of an odd trait of human nature that bubbled to the surface that even sort of surprised me during the pandemic. I mean, a simple thing, another simple observation was that when all of this started in the first few podcasts, I said, this is not going away. And many people last summer said, ah, come on, we'll be fine by September. And here we are still in a form of, as I said, lockdown, in a form of restrictive society. So no, it hasn't really gone anywhere. Are we entering, as I sort of gravely said, the age of pandemics? Hard to say, but it certainly seems that once you've opened Pandora's box, you've let the genie out of the bottle, I find it very hard to see how we don't deal with other situations with lockdown or more restrictive measures. And people have been sort of, you know, softened up now. This was like the first morning military barrage before you get the big guns. Maybe, who knows? Hopefully not. Hopefully this is just a fading memory and it's moving, you know, it's receding in our rearview mirror. And we can get back to, I don't think we'll ever get back to complete normality, whatever that means, but we'll get back to the levels of freedom and liberty we had before. Oh, Alan, stop talking about freedom and liberty, blah, 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 blah. How did those things become dirty words? I find really fascinating. And how normal people advocated for censorship and free speech laws. And also what I found really fascinating was I posted a few things just about Pfizer's profit margin and people called me an anti-VC-er. You can't really say those words. Really? So all of a sudden, people who, let's say 10 years ago, would have been on the side of people during the Occupy movement for their rightful, I think, observation of what the 1% represented, and whether it was the banking system or all those kind of systems of oppression, are now defending Big Pharma. Did you forget what side of history you were on? Did you forget you were in the 99% or whatever you want to call it? Did you forget that these are the huge, you know, multinational companies that really don't give a F about your well-being? How did that turn on its head, that normal, you know, once sense-making individuals ended up in the corner of the multinationals? But that's what we found. I received those messages myself and I said, wow, you can't even mention a 37 billion profit margin for being accused of you know, being Trumpist or whatever. And I think that was part of it. The Trump derangement syndrome is just something that really hangs over society, and it validated all sorts of responses to anything, because he exploded or you want to call it detonated, the middle ground whereby either side of a polarized debate felt they had to cross, you know, shake hands over the divide and sit down at the same table. He just basically, the gloves were off. And especially on elements of the mainstream media, it just seemed that any questioning, any skepticism, just then placed you into the arms of the extreme right, for example, which makes no sense, of course, because it should be your place to have questions, to be skeptical. Certainly, if we're going to remove our right to ask questions of impositions of state tech on authority, health impositions, and what your, you know, what the state and health officials are, health officials, health structures are going to do with your children, for example. Well, then we're on a pretty dark path, but I think we're on that pretty dark path already. So, yeah, I think we are still in a form of lockdown. I asked somebody in Australia about that. I will say that my prognosis about live music and travel, I think were maybe too negative, because live music is certainly coming back. Tours are happening in America, and pretty much open tours. A lot of European countries, people messaging me from Budapest, Copenhagen, Bucharest, Stockholm, saying, yeah, we went to see a band, 100, 200 people, things are moving back, venues are back open. And that's great. The music industry has come from, like, a, you know, basically from being almost completely KO'd to at least now on its knees. Now, whether it can get to its feet remains to be seen, but it's great hearing positive news from everybody all across, all across the world, most of the world, and Europe and America and stuff, about shows happening, gigs happening again, people being able to return to art, music, culture, to return to all those kind of things. It's not just about having a few pints and this, that, and the other. A world without live music or music in this sense is a very dark and grim world already. And that's something we don't need to hand over to systems of, to the, you know, to the arbitrary flick of a switch or a pen of some jumped up middle management health official who decides whether we can or cannot have the communion of live music, etc., etc. I've made it very clear which side of the divide I stand on. And so it's great news to hear all these coming back. Like I said, nothing has happened here. I think we're not quite a lost cause, and my prognosis of a winter of no music or no art or culture or you know, public expressions of those are now seeming like you know, a bit too negative, but we still aren't there yet. But it's great to see, for example, even with Dread Sovereign, we're going on a small tour in the UK next week, theoretically. I mean, I never count my chickens until I'm actually about to set foot on the stage, so to speak. But it looks like it can happen. Now, what happens when we get the new Monster Energy variant or whatever? I say that because I'm sitting in front of a can of blue, ultra blue Monster Energy. Not just blue, ultra blue, whatever that means. And so we could get a new, we could get something else that, you know, pushes live music back into the horror of the live stream once again. But it looks like there might be, like the fog is clearing, at least in live music. And travel also, the last few times I've traveled, airports have been packed. All seats have been taken. People have been moving again. And that, for me at least, is great to see, that people are stepping over the boundaries of, you know, fear and the things they've been inculcated with the last 20 months, and they're going, well, look, we need to get on with living, etc. Especially coming from an island. Now, you may disagree about elements of that, and of course, yeah, that's fair enough. I'm not going to get into the, I suppose, the climate debate related to that just yet. Might do that in another podcast. What else can I see in my page of random scribbled notes here? I mean, do I get into activism? I think in the first month or two, some of us thought that the level of activism, I suppose you want to call it, or social agitation that was happening in society, identity politics, might just take a rest because the concept of a virus, which we did not know how of its lethality, that it might just, you know, the arms might be put down for a while. But in fact, what we saw was an acceleration of that because everyone was at the everyone was behind their screen, just taking in even more information. Our lizard brain, which is constantly being poked, and we got more angry, more polarized. And I guess this was when you really sat back and thought about it, an inevitability, which a lot of us got wrong for the first 1 or 2 months, because it seemed like there was a sort of a communality of purpose, at least in society, as people pulled together. But how quickly that fell apart. And so now we're reaching some crazy stages. I mean, I only the other day was reading about, a court sitting in England about judging, how can we call it, the consent of 10-year-olds, as you know, in relation to their parents' wishes. Hey, pretty dark stuff when you're debating the consent of 10-year-olds. In my opinion, if you believe in Santa Claus, you shouldn't really be allowed to challenge these things, or at least make decisions that will impinge upon the rest of your life. However, but we're not going to get into that. Was the World Economic Forum the bogeyman that we all thought they were? Remains to be seen. It's hard to say. They've gone pretty quiet, but you know, people are spending so much time online. It really empowered the loudest elements of the polarized elements of society. They still make proclamations. You know, Klaus Schwab still has his Dr. Evil vibe going on. Maybe he got a new jacket. I don't know. They seem to have dropped out of a bit of the public conversation. Now, is that perhaps that they got certain things that they wanted? Or was it just the talk shop that maybe we alluded to? It's hard to say. Again, throughout this whole thing, I've tried to hold the line between either side of the debate and the grey areas where most things reside. And the fact that if this was some huge huge worldwide conspiracy, it would involve so many working parts as to make it unworkable. And so the reality is it just part incompetence, part failure of institutions? Is it just the fumbling in the dark of human nature erring on the side of never-ending caution? It's about the avoidance by the political class of risk because they're in the re-election cycle. All of these kind of things. It's so many things that it makes it almost impossible to untangle. Moving through my random messy notes here, I found it quite incredible the amount of apologism, is that a word? The apologies that were granted to the CCP. The amount of opprobrium heaped on people who dared to question the pangolin narrative, let's say, from 20 months ago. You were screamed at, you were shut down, you were censored. And now all we have to do is look at Fauci taking the stand, more or less admitting, what happened. And still people cling to the idea that the lab leak hypothesis is some sort of alt-right conspiracy, where just a little bit of investigating would you can see Fauci on the stand discussing this. You only have to do a little bit of digging to go, right, something's not correct with this narrative. But yet questioning that narrative places you in firmly in Trumpistan. And how can that be that the people placing you there are unwilling to think about, question the motives of, again, big pharma, of big state, of, let's also be clear, the CCP. You know, the amount of people I've said to, well, this is the same party that presided over the Great Leap Forward. What's the Great Leap Forward? Well, maybe you should have a look at that. How quickly we forgot Hong Kong. We forgot Tiananmen and all these other transgressions against liberty. And also because our political systems in the West are flawed. You know, they're like a precarious deck of cards, or no, you know, house of cards. Politicians are in the election cycle. They have their own personal risk. They have their own personal issues, in the sense that don't exist in China, because it's one party state that is not born of the re-election process. So therefore, they can plan for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, however many years you want, whereas our systems can't. And so therefore, ours are more fragile, which was brutally exposed in the pandemic. And how odd it was to see people twisting and turning to try and reframe the narrative to place an authoritarian regime in this sunny uplands of, I suppose, liberal optimism, if that's the right way to say it. And the abdication by the mainstream media of its responsibility to hold power to account. I suppose once upon a time the media was, let's say, you know, or elements of the mainstream media were outside the tent pissing in, and their attempt was to hold power to account. They weren't or didn't aspire to be like the political class that they were writing about. Now I sense the opposite is true, that many people writing in the mainstream media quite want to be inside the tent, hobnobbing with the people who make these political decisions. We made rock stars of our health officials. We handed over power over liberty and freedom to unelected health officials who never, in my opinion, quite counted the social cost of their actions. And what were their links to, for example, the very big pharma I discussed prior to this? Again, everything is so complicated and so intertwined, and the truth is so grey. And throughout these 78, 79 episodes, I've had to wonder about the wisdom of, you know, putting out some of these opinions there, because it's certain it will affect the music that I make or the people who like the band and go, I like that. I like Primordial before he said this, that, and the other. But I would say that we must try and consider the terms of freedom of speech, rationality, the ability that we once had to be able to hold open discourse with opposing points of view. I think I've been tried to hold the line somewhere in the middle, and I don't belong to either side. But if anything, the last, you know, to kind of sum up, because this is part one of a part two look at some of these things, what we've seen clearly is how much of life is performative, whether it's from the political class to the media class to even in our own daily life, how much of it is performative. It's like as if the pandemic stripped back a few veils, let's say, pull the curtains past a bit, and we got to look clearly at the cogs whirring, the machine whirring, and how much of it really is emperor's new clothesism, if you want to say it like this. How much of society, how much of things are performative, how much of all of these leaked messages. Even the yesterday I was listening to Jocko Willink's podcast, and they were discussing Biden's leaked phone call memos to fleeing Afghani president, and they were just, how do we make this look a certain way, even though we both know what's going to happen? And that just sort of sums everything up, the performative nature of modern society. But underneath it are some very dark undercurrents of authoritarianism, which now seem to be in the ascendancy in the former, I suppose, not the former, but in Western society, which had freedom and liberty as its core values. And those, I think, it's not a stretch to say that those are under some form of existential threat and very real threat. Of course, I can always just say, and it's true, I'm just a singer in a heavy metal band. I'm not a politician or an epidemiologist or whatever else. And if you disagree with the things I'm saying, that's all right. That's fine. That's the nature of this discourse that should be taken in good faith, that I'm the singer in a heavy metal band and these are just my ramblings on my podcast. So to sum up, so many things, there's going to be a part two of this. We saw how little music and art was worth. We certainly saw that that was the first thing to be sacrificed and how little it meant. But you know what? A performative life. I think that's my takeaway, is how, I suppose, with a certain horror, I viewed perhaps how little sometimes freedom and liberty seemed to mean, or freedom of speech seemed to mean, and how willing people were to trade that away for a sort of state and health sanctioned, how should we call it, security, as defined by those institutions, etc., etc. It's a ramble. It's a ramble. I'll get back to music next time. If you don't like these kind of podcasts, well, you know, tune in next week. It'll probably be a completely different off-the-cuff ramble. But I thought it might be interesting to just look back at some of those things. As they say, your average man doesn't want freedom. He wants security. Anyway, J.P. Mencken. Or did I get that right? I suppose I should think about quoting people. H.R. Mencken, J.P. Mencken, who knows? Sorry if I got your first name and initials wrong. But anyway, the dust isn't settled. The fog is not cleared. It seems to be clearing. And again, the truth, my friends, is that most things reside in the grey area between either of those realities. My friends, this is Agitators Anonymous. It's a all over the place ramble about all things lockdown and pandemic related and how things have been for the last 20-21 months. I'm Alan Averill. This is Agitators Anonymous.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.